Now, I could be a stupid person and say, oh, no, we don't want a free plane.
Well, A, you are stupid, and B, the plane ain't free, genius.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's one reason.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No,
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIB, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites, Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. All right, we have got really so many different things coming in from so many different directions today. I wasn't sure where to go. I couldn't decide. So I think, in fact, we may go all over the place today, Desi Doyen.
All right, well, it'll be variety day.
Think of it as sort of a poo-poo platter of a Bradcast.
Which
yeah, isn't all that different from how some people refer to this show who may not like it. But in any event, this poo-poo platter, I should note, may even offer a few musical delights before it's all said and done, if time allows. But for now, I'm sorry to say, for the moment, we will start with some grimmer news. Now that the corporate broadcast media has sort of taken a moment to return to coverage of mass gun violence for a few fleeting minutes, with a shooting taking place in their own backyard in Midtown Manhattan on Monday, it might be a good time to note an exclusive from Reuters today. The Trump administration has terminated more than half of all federal funding for gun violence prevention programs in the U.S.
Half?
Yep.
Wow.
Cutting $158 million in grants that had been directed to groups in cities like, yes, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Baltimore. Of the 145 community violence intervention, or CVI, grants totaling more than $300 million, that were awarded through the U.S. Department of Justice, 69 of those grants were abruptly terminated back in April, shortly after Trump took office for his second term. That, according to government data that was analyzed by Reuters, the elimination of these CVI programs is part of a broader rollback at the department's grant-issuing Office of Justice programs, which terminated 365 grants valued at $811 million back in April, impacting a range of public safety and victim services programs. What was that whole thing during Trump's campaign about making America safe again? Yeah, maybe not so much. A DOJ official told Reuters that the gun violence grants were eliminated because they, quote, no longer effectuate the program's goals or agency's priorities. Again, the grants we're talking about here were for gun violence prevention programs, but that sort of thing, I guess, is no longer an agency priority for the Department of Justice.
Wow.
Thousands of Office of Justice programs grants are now under review, the official said, and they are being reevaluated. The majority of the CVI grants were originally funded through the 2022 Bipartisan Safer Communities Act as part of a push by former President Joe Biden to stem the rise of gun violence in America, including establishing the first White House Office for Gun Violence Prevention. That office was, quote, dismantled on day one of Trump taking office, said the former deputy director of that office. Prior to the Biden-era funding, most gun violence prevention programs were funded on the state level, but they had very small budgets. The grants had supported a wide range of CVI programming to prevent shootings, such as training outreach teams to de-escalate and media conflict, social workers to connect people to services and employment, and hospital-based programs for gun violence victims. Got rid of that. Gun violence deaths in the U.S. grew more than 50% from 2015, just before Trump's first term, to the pandemic-era peak of 21,383 in the year 2021. That would be just after Trump's term, according to the Gun Violence Archive. So I guess Trump is just hoping to repeat his last performance of essentially growing gun violence by 50% during his second term in office, maybe going for a record this time since the governance worked so well the first time. I don't know. Since then, since Biden took office, essentially, deadly shootings have been in decline, falling to 16,700 in 2024, which is more in line with the pre-pandemic trend. We will see if that changes in the years ahead as Trump continues to gut efforts proven to be effective in the fight to prevent gun violence, as New York saw its worst mass shooting since 2000 on Monday afternoon when a 27-year-old gunman targeted a Manhattan skyscraper. Shane Tamura stormed the office building at 345 Park Avenue shortly before 6:30 p.m., spraying the lobby with bullets from an AR-15-style rifle, according to Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch. Four people are now dead, including an off-duty New York City Police Department officer and an executive at Blackstone, one of the world's, if not the largest, but pretty close, largest private equity firms in the across the globe. While it was the most deadly mass shooting in New York City since 2000, in truth, it was just one of among at least 254 mass shootings in the U.S. so far this year, according to the Gun Violence Archive. After killing four others, the gunman killed himself, claiming in a note to have a brain disease linked to contact sports. It appears he was trying to target the National Football League's headquarters, which is in the same building, but he took the wrong elevator, officials said on Tuesday. Investigators believe that the man, a Las Vegas casino worker, was trying to get up to the NFL offices after shooting several people in the lobby on Monday, but the wrong elevator led him to a different place entirely in that building. Tamura, who played high school football in California nearly two decades ago out here, but never in the NFL, had a history of mental illness, according to police. In a three-page handwritten note found in his wallet, he claimed he suffered from chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, and he accused the NFL of concealing the dangers to players' brains for profit. The degenerative brain disease has been linked to concussions and other repeated head trauma common in contact sports like football, but it can only be diagnosed apparently after someone has died. The NFL has long denied the link between football and CTE, but it acknowledged the connection in 2016 during testimony before Congress, and it has paid more than $1.4 billion to retired players to settle concussion-related claims. As to the shooter on Monday with a history of mental illness, I will note that in addition to cutting millions in grants for gun violence prevention programs since taking office in January 6 months ago, the Trump administration has also cut more than $12 billion in mental health grants and programs, including, again, back in April, slashing $1 billion in school-based mental health grants originally funded through the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which was passed after the Uvalde school shooting down in Texas. I guess we don't need that anymore. though do keep all of this in mind the next time that you hear Republicans after the next mass shooting talking about how, well, there's no need to implement any gun safety laws. What we really need to do, the real problem is mental illness, which their Republican hero president programs to deal with those that issue. Their hero has just slashed more than $12 billion worth of programs and grants meant to help mental illness, thanks to the bipartisan legislation that was passed by those very same Republicans whose work is now just been, well, canceled by Donald Trump. But, you know, the Trump administration, they are all about cutting waste, fraud, and abuse from federal government spending, right? Well, you probably saw this week that Donald Trump was pretending to be upset about cost overruns for the renovation of the Federal Reserve headquarters in Washington, D.C. on the Mall. Of course, he is only pretending to be upset about that. He actually doesn't give a damn because it is what Trump plans to cite if and when he decides to try, at least, to fire the chairman of the Fed, Jay Powell, who Trump is angry at because Powell and the Federal Reserve Board are currently refusing to lower interest rates until they see how Trump's threatened tariff regime may affect the U.S. economy. Trump cannot legally fire Powell as the Fed chair after having appointed him, by the way, in his first term. He can't legally do it unless he can show some sort of malfeasance or incompetence and, needing to spend more money on revamping the 100-year-old Federal Reserve building, apparently, is seen as just the ticket to remove Jay Powell at some point by this White House if Trump decides he wants to play that card, since his economy has already been slowing down so far this year. GDP has fallen in the first quarter of the year, etc. So with all of that in mind, as the New York Times notes this week, President Trump makes no secret of his displeasure over the cost of renovating the Federal Reserve headquarters around $2.5 billion or even higher by the president's accounting. Now, he tried to claim that it was actually costing $3.1 billion this week during his tour of the renovation with Powell. But Powell corrected those numbers by pointing out that Trump was actually including an entirely different building that had been completed 5 years ago. But the Times notes, when it comes to getting the White House to discuss another of D.C.'s expensive renovation projects, the cost of refurbishing a supposedly free Air Force One that was supposedly gifted from Qatar, well, that is apparently quite another matter. Officially and conveniently, they note, the price tag for that renovation has been classified. It is a secret.
Huh. What do you know?
Why is it classified? What's the official reason for that? Well, there doesn't actually appear to be any official reason, as the Times reports. But even by Washington standards, they note, where black budgets are often used as an excuse to avoid revealing the cost of outdated spy satellites, lavish end-of-year parties, etc., the techniques being used to hide the cost of Trump's pet project are inventive, they explain, which may explain why no one wants to discuss a mysterious $934 million transfer of funds from one of the Pentagon's most over-budget, out-of-control projects, the modernization of America's aging ground-based nuclear missiles, whose aging silos need to be replaced after they were initially installed during the Cold War back in the 1960s, and they've now degraded, they leak, they rust, etc., etc. In recent weeks, apparently, budget sleuths have come to think that that amount, that $934 million that mysteriously was transferred out of that project, was slipped into an obscure Pentagon document sent to Capitol Hill as a, quote, transfer to an unnamed classified project, and that it almost certainly includes the renovation of the new gold-adorned Air Force One that Donald Trump desperately wants in the air before his term is over. Air Force officials privately acknowledged dipping into nuclear modernization funds for this complex project, the Times reports. Qatar's defense minister and our defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, signed the final memorandum of understanding a few weeks ago for this corrupt project, paving the way for the renovation to begin very soon on the plane that is valued anywhere from $400 million to $1 billion. The renovation will take place at a Texas facility known for secret technology projects. Trump's plane probably won't fly for very long, however. It's going to take a year or maybe 2 years to get the renovation work done. Apparently, it needs to be pretty much torn apart from top to bottom to ensure that there are no spy gadgets on the plane. And they need to install high-tech security stuff that is needed for a jumbo jet that serves as Air Force One. And then the Qatari gift, improved with the latest communications and in-flight protective technology, will finally be transferred to the yet-to-be-created Trump Presidential Library after he leaves office in 2029, when he'll be able to do anything with it that he wants, apparently, including using it for himself or, who knows, selling it if he can find a buyer. In any case, he gets to keep it, apparently, after you and I and all the other U.S. taxpayers have paid millions of dollars to improve it for him. Apparently, stealing taxpayer dollars that were already earmarked to prevent our intercontinental Minuteman nuclear missile stockpile from degrading into uselessness, which wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, except the danger part of that. And then he gets to keep it. You're welcome, Mr. President. Concerns over the many apparent conflicts of interests involved in this transaction, for example, the violations of the U.S. Constitution, which explicitly bars public officials from receiving gifts, quote, of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state, pretty easy to understand in the Constitution, if you bother to read it, which is not clear Donald Trump ever has. But yeah, any king, prince, or foreign state, you know, like the Emirate of Qatar, for example, that king, prince, or foreign state language was intentionally included by the founders in the U.S. Constitution, in fact, to specifically guard against foreign influence and corruption. In 18th century Europe, it was common for monarchs to offer gifts and titles and honors to diplomats and officials as subtle bribes, and the clause in the U.S. Constitution was designed to prevent that from happening, to prevent U.S. officials from being swayed by these sorts of gestures, ensuring loyalty instead to the Republic of the United States alone. But I'm sure Trump will still, no matter the gift, he'll certainly hold the Qatari potentate's feet to the fire after they have given him a $400 million plane, right?
Of course.
The Times notes that Trump's government dealings and business ties with Qatar, with the Qataris have swirled since reports of the gift emerged this spring. But the president himself said that he was unconcerned. He cast the decision as a no-brainer for taxpayers to accept this plane, saying at one point, quote, I would never be one to turn down that kind of offer. This was back in May. He said, I mean, I could be a stupid person and say, no, we don't want a free, very expensive plane. But here's the problem, and I'll link over to the Times story on this with a free an actual free gift link when posting today's broadcast. But I just want to point this out because Trump has said this several times. We're getting this free plane. We'd be stupid if we didn't take it. He's gutting programs that actually help Americans, that actually reduce gun violence, that actually help people with mental illness, at least people who are not named Donald Trump. Because back when this nonsense came up with Trump saying, you know, you'd be a stupid person not to accept this, quote, free plane. Well, the U.S. has been for some years now working to upgrade Air Force One. We've got Boeing building the new one, actually building two new ones, because we always have a backup, apparently. And it's a really expensive project, and it has been underway for years, and it is still underway. The new planes, the new Air Force Ones at some point will eventually be used as Air Force One. So Trump's free plane, so-called, which experts say will cost about $1 billion to upgrade for use by Trump and by Trump only before he then gets to keep it. Well, it is not actually free at all. It is free perhaps to him, but not to the country. It is costing us, costing taxpayers about $1 billion to upgrade. So he can use it as president and keep it as a private citizen after leaving office, after we have added $1 billion worth of taxpayer money to it. None of that is going to save us money. None of that is going to prevent us from having to build the new Air Force Ones. This is only free to him. It is a gift from the American people to Donald Trump. It is going to cost us $1 billion at the same time he's cutting all of these other things that actually help. Like, you know, researching for cures for cancer. Can't afford that, but we can afford this. We can afford to add new gold trim to Donald Trump's creepy new Air Force One from an Arab nation. The U.S. is still on the hook for those new Air Force One planes. This is nothing but a Trump vanity project and a, frankly, bribe, an unconstitutional emolument from a foreign government. When asked last week, the Air Force said it simply could not discuss the cost or anything else about the plane because it has been classified. For the record, the Times notes, for collectors of such bureaucratic evasions, yes, the Air Force is willing to discuss the cost of building a new generation of intercontinental ballistic missiles, but not the cost of renovating the president's plane. Only at the Pentagon, they note, could someone reprogram $934 million and expect no one to notice. The coffers were refilled there with the passage of the budget reconciliation bill several weeks ago. You know, the one that will take health care away from about 15 million Americans. Because we can't afford it. Quote, the more we learn about this deal, the more disturbing it becomes, said Senator Jeanne Shaheen, Democrat of New Hampshire, who serves on the Armed Services Committee. She says the security implications of accepting a private plane from a foreign nation as Air Force One and the resulting ethical concerns a gift of that size creates were already significant. But it was more worrisome, she said, that, quote, this administration is diverting funds from the nuclear modernization budget to finance costly renovations to this plane. In doing so, she said, we're weakening our credibility to fund a vanity project for President Trump.
A total national security threat. I mean, in so many ways, but just in this one specific way, a total national security threat, all to give Trump his little present.
And speaking of Trump corruption, while some of it, like Air Force One, will leave with him if he ever does leave office, a lot of his corruption we're going to be stuck with for years. Long after he has died, most likely, including on the federal bench, unless Senate Republicans grow a set and finally stand up for the rule of law as they pretend to favor. A third whistleblower now has come forward, according to the Washington Post, to challenge the federal lifetime judicial nomination of Emil Bovey, one of Trump's personal criminal defense lawyers who he had put into a top position. Let's call it Trump Fixer over at the Department of Justice. The new whistleblower has, like the two before them, come forward to share hard evidence with lawmakers suggesting the controversial former attorney for Trump, and the Post should have put the word former in quotes there, frankly, and the current top Justice Department official misled lawmakers, should have said lied to them, about his handling of the Trump DOJ dismissal of the public corruption charges that were filed against New York Mayor Eric Adams. The new whistleblower, whose existence has not previously been reported on, contends the evidence they're putting forward contradicts Bovey's sworn testimony last month to the Senate Judiciary Committee overseeing his appointment by Trump as a federal appeals court judge, which could take a final vote on his nomination to the lifetime role on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit this week, as early perhaps as Tuesday, perhaps even before we are off the air. The Washington Post reviewed the evidence in question and agreed to withhold details of it to protect the identity of this whistleblower, who's because of the whistleblower's fear of retribution, apparently. The lawyers say they have also turned that material over to the Justice Department's Office of the Inspector General. Donald Trump formally nominated Bovey, who represented Trump in three of his four criminal cases, nominated him to this lifetime judicial post back in June, and the process has been on a faster timeline than normal for most other judicial nominations. The information follows revelations from two other Justice Department whistleblowers who have said that Bovey told subordinates at the DOJ in a meeting back in March that they may need to ignore court orders entirely, ignore orders from a federal judge, essentially commit contempt of court if those orders might otherwise hamper Trump's campaign to deport millions of undocumented immigrants. The guy who, according to two previous whistleblowers, actually told DOJ attorneys they might need to ignore orders from a judge, that guy is now being fast-tracked through the U.S. Senate confirmation process by Republicans in order to become a judge himself, because Trump is demanding it. One of those whistleblowers, ousted Justice Department attorney Erez Rouvini, has since gone public with his account about all of this, including emails and texts and other materials that back up that account. The new whistleblower has offered information about Bovey's role in the dismissal of New York Mayor Adams, his corruption case against him back in February, which led to the ousting of prosecutors in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York and the public integrity section at the Justice Department headquarters when those attorneys refused to sign off on dismissing these charges because they were rock solid and detailed Eric Adams' corrupt years-long gifts that he received from Turkey and the favors that he gave to Turkey in exchange. So everybody knew they had this guy dead to rights, but Trump has, I guess, legalized, make corruption legal again at this point. Multiple prosecutors ended up resigning rather than sign off on this request from Bovey to drop the prosecution. I think Bovey had to do it himself because they wanted no part of it. He currently serves as a senior official still at the Justice Department, where he has also been at the center of the efforts to fire career prosecutors and craft legal strategy on immigration. Senate Democrats have spent weeks now trying to persuade their Republican colleagues to block the Bovey nomination, arguing it would prioritize the president's agenda over properly enforcing the law. So far, Republicans have largely dismissed the allegations against Bovey, despite all of the evidence supporting them, including the on-the-record claims made by Ruvini, who was fired in April after he admitted at a court hearing that the administration mistakenly deported Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the Maryland man. Abrego was flown to a prison in El Salvador despite a court order barring the move, and Ruvini was the guy who accurately told the court that the DOJ had done so by accident. He wasn't supposed to be deported. And of course, for the crime of telling the truth in court, Ruvini was fired. In his whistleblower complaint, Ruvini said that Bovee, quote, stressed to all in attendance at a March meeting that the planes that the Trump administration was using to ship out these migrants under an invocation of the Alien Enemies Act, a law which was used previously to inter Japanese Americans during World War II. Bovee told the people in attendance that these planes, quote, need to take off no matter what, unquote, and that Justice Department attorneys may have to tell judges, quote, F you, and ignore court orders to achieve the immigration goals of Donald Trump. Democrats argue that an attorney who advocates defying court orders is unfit to serve on the federal bench. Crazy, I know.
With a lifetime appointment.
Yep.
For
but,
decades.
The Senate Judiciary Committee Chair, Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, has said that even if Ruvini's account is mostly true, it doesn't disqualify Bovee. Just because he's a top DOJ attorney telling other attorneys to ignore the court, that's not disqualifying. Last week, two Republicans, Senators Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, they both had the decency to vote against taking up Bovee's nomination, and they have indicated that they will oppose his confirmation. Good for them. But Democrats need two more Republicans in order to block Bovee if, in fact, all senators are voting. Democrats had hoped to sway Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina. He's not running for re-election next year, so he opposed the nomination of Ed Martin, the Republican MAGA activist who was hoping to be the U.S. attorney in D.C. Tillis opposed him because of his support for pro-Trump rioters who attacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6. Martin had represented them in court, apparently. But because Tillis dropped out, that forced the White House to pull his nomination. Tillis doesn't appear to be ready to do that here. He told reporters this month he does not have the same problem with Bovee, saying, quote, he didn't trip the switch on January 6. No, he just told DOJ attorneys to defy a court order to turn the planes around that were unlawfully used to ship migrants to a maximum security prison in El Salvador. And now the guy wants to be a lifetime appointed judge on the federal appeals court. And Tillis seems to be fine with that. He has not responded to requests from the Washington Post to review the evidence from the third whistleblower. According to the whistleblower's attorney, spokesman for Tillis did not respond to the paper for comment. Again, that vote for Bovee to become a lifetime judge on the U.S. appeals court could happen now at any time this week in the U.S. Senate. Keep your eyes out for it. All right. Poo-poo platter indeed. Let's take a quick break here. We'll be back with more poo-poo, I guess, including Desi Doyen's latest Green News report.
Yeah.
Also some disturbing environmental news that has broken since we laid down today's GNR. And I think a perhaps more enjoyable musical tribute to the late, great Tom Lehrer, who passed away this week at the age of 97. That is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Time was when an American about to go abroad would be warned by his friends or the guidebooks not to drink the water. But times have changed, and now a foreigner coming to this country might be offered the following advice.
If you visit American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, they got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud. See the halibuts and the sturgeons being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste. Just go out for a breath of air, and you'll be ready for Medicare. The city streets are really quite a thrill. If the hoods don't get you, the monoxide will. Pollution, pollution, wear a gas mask and a veil. Then you can breathe, long as you don't inhale. Lots of things there that you can drink, but stay away from the kitchen sink. The breakfast garbage that you throw into the bay, they drink at lunch in San Jose. So go to the city, see the crazy people there, like lambs to the slaughter. They're drinking the water and breathing the air.
That was the now late, great Tom Lehrer. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We lost the great musical satirist this week. He lampooned marriage, politics, racism, and the Cold War. And then apparently he largely abandoned his music career entirely to return to teaching math at Harvard and other universities. He died this week. He was 97 years old. No cause was given, though, you know, 97, so. But, I'm listening to that song, and I'm thinking, well, things aren't quite as bad as they might have been back in the 50s and 60s when he performed this song with Pollution, although maybe that's only with, you know, pollution that you could see. There's a lot of other pollution that you can't see.
This is true.
That is getting worse and worse. We'll get to that in a second. But in 2020, Tom Lehrer released all of the copyrights to all of his songs, granted the public permission to use his lyrics in any format whatsoever without any fee in return.
That is very generous.
A Harvard prodigy, he had earned a math degree from the institution at age 18. He entered Harvard at the age of 15 years old. Lehrer soon turned to very clever and often hilarious songs, including Poisoning Pigeons in the Park, Be Prepared, in which he mocked the Boy Scouts, and The Vatican Rag, in which Lehrer, an atheist, poked fun at the rites and ceremonies of the Roman Catholic Church. He attacked in such an erudite way, even polite manner, that almost no one objected even to the attacks on the church.
Yep.
Quote, Tom Lehrer is the most brilliant song satirist ever recorded, said musicologist Barry Hansen. Hansen, co-produced the 2000 box set of Lehrer's songs called The Remains of Tom Lehrer and had featured his music for decades on his syndicated Dr. Demento show. Remember that on the radio? Lair stopped performing and writing songs, however, many years ago, preferring to return to teach math, noting at one point that from time to time students would enroll in one of his math classes based on knowledge of his songs, saying, "But it's a real math class." He said, "I don't know any funny theorems." So those people would apparently go away pretty quickly. They didn't get what they wanted. Anyway, he was lost. We will see if we'll have time for one more quickie before we go from Tom Lehrer.
But there is no way that we can get to all of his great songs, unfortunately. But either way, look up all of his songs. They are hilarious.
We'll get to our latest Green News Report momentarily. Trigger warning. It includes a few quotes from our corrupt, insane president. But speaking of pollution, this story came in after today's GNR was already out, but I think it is a very big story that we may talk more about as the week goes on. Donald Trump's administration on Tuesday proposed revoking a scientific finding that has long been the central basis for pretty much all U.S. action when it comes to regulating greenhouse gas emissions and fighting climate change. The proposed EPA rule would rescind a 2009 declaration that determined that, yes, in fact, carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases like methane endanger public health and welfare. And that finding from 2009 is now the legal underpinning for a host of climate regulations under the Clean Air Act for motor vehicles, power plants, other sources of pollution that are heating the planet. Desiree, is this the very same climate endangerment finding that I recall from, I guess, almost 20 years ago from the EPA? It was originally created by the George W. Bush Environmental Protection Agency, but when it was sent to the White House for final approval, the White House refused to open the email. They knew what it was, but they refused to open it because it would then require them to take action on climate change if they saw it. So it wasn't opened, apparently, until Barack Obama took office. Am I remembering all of that correctly?
You're remembering most of that correctly. But first, it's important to note that when Congress initially established the EPA back in 1970, it granted the agency very broad authority to investigate and to regulate pollutants like the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act that followed shortly after. Congress gave EPA the authority to conduct research on the effects of pollutants, to monitor air and water quality, right, to collect data, assess risks. Now, climate change was not on Congress's radar when the EPA was established back then. So, crucially, Congress also included provisions in the Clean Air Act for EPA to update its list of pollutants as scientific understanding evolved.
As they were discovered, as the elements,
exactly,
the pollution, types of pollution, as we determined that, oh, this is toxic or that is toxic, you guys over at the EPA, under the Clean Air Act, under the Clean Water Act, can go ahead and make regulations to keep Americans safe.
Exactly. So in 2007, then, the Supreme Court ruled in a case called Massachusetts versus EPA that greenhouse gases do qualify as air pollutants under the Clean Air Act. Now, the ruling affirmed that the EPA has the authority to regulate these newly identified pollutants. But the court did not say that the EPA must regulate greenhouse gases outright. Instead, it said that the agency must make a determination called an endangerment finding about whether those emissions pose a threat. Now, if the EPA finds that they do pose a threat to human health, then it is legally obligated to regulate them. And that is the key word, if.
Well, and that, just to clarify, because the Clean Air Act says that if the EPA finds that things that endanger us, then they must make regulations to protect us.
Right.
That was exactly what this was. The EPA saying, yes, this endangers us.
Yes, right. So in December 2007, the Bush era EPA completed their draft endangerment finding, concluding that, yes, greenhouse gases do pose a danger to public health and welfare because they cause climate change. Now, the document, as you noted, was emailed to the head of the regulatory division at the Office of Management and Budget at the White House. Uh-huh. But according to the EPA, NBA official who sent it, Jason Burnett. The White House refused to open that email. So you do remember that part correctly.
Okay.
But then it fell to the Obama EPA to start over again and do that job. So that ultimately became the 2009 endangerment.
So they
finding.
Had to make their own finding.
Yes, they had to go through the whole process all
gotcha.
Over again.
I gotcha.
And so that then became the foundation for many climate regulations.
Yep.
Now, this is all about weakening the government's authority to curtail carbon emissions mm-hmm. from all polluting energies, industries, energy, cars, trucks, mm-hmm. et cetera. The move now would end EPA regulations on greenhouse gas emissions on cars as well, and undercut all the rules that limit power plant emissions and control the release of climate warming methane by oil and gas companies. In other words, it's a huge way to destroy the endangerment finding because, hey, if there's no endangerment finding, then you're not obligated to regulate.
So they are hoping to unfind what they had already found.
Yes.
Never mind a big Emily Littell. Never mind. We didn't. What the endangerment find? It's not dangerous at all.
Yes, exactly. And remember, this is also all straight out of Project 2025. That the idea that they should do what they can, the Republicans should do what they can to repeal this endangerment finding so they don't have to regulate climate. And in fact, if this goes through, future administrations would potentially be prevented from regulating climate emissions at all.
So we had the endangerment finding. Now we're about to have the endangerment unfinding.
Yep.
And you're saying that once we unfind it and determine, nope, that's not dangerous at all, that we can't have a future EPA come in and say, yeah, it is dangerous. It was always dangerous. They had it right the first time.
If it goes all the way up to the right-wing supermajority on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Uh-huh.
So there is going to be a ton of litigation around all of this, so we'll see what happens. But yes, that is the ultimate goal of this, to make it impossible for the federal government to save us by cutting emissions that cause catastrophic climate change.
And I do think it's a very big deal. I don't think we fully appreciate or understand how big a deal it is, as I said. So I hope to talk about that a little bit more as the week, as the month, as the years go on, I
yes.
suspect. If, in fact, they do what they are threatening to do, what they're now promising to do, what they're saying we're doing. I think it's still in the draft phase, but
yes.
the EPA director, Lee Zeldin, was on some right-wing podcast show saying, yep, we're going to do it.
It's a dagger to the heart of climate regulations.
The endangerment finding?
Yeah.
Killing the endangerment
yeah,
finding.
Yeah, him killing
it. It's a dagger
it.
To the heart of regulations.
Yeah.
Which is what we needed. A dagger to the heart of the regulations that give us, oh, I don't know, clean water, clean air, all of the stuff that Donald Trump used to pretend when he was avoiding talking about climate change. He was, oh, well, I'm all in favor of clean water and clean air. Because he doesn't consider air with too much CO2, too much methane, to not be clean. That's just fine by him.
Yes. And of course, we are now seeing the consequences of inaction about climate change playing out now. Just look at the disastrous Texas floods or any of the other fun things we're about to talk about in the Green News Report.
In your latest Green News Report.
It was like some kind of underwater apocalypse had taken place.
Algae bloom and marine heat wave decimating South Australia's coast and fisheries. Iran grapples with water shortages and extreme heat. Plus,
we will not allow a windmill to be built in the United States.
Donald Trump's irrational hatred of renewable energy is killing jobs across the U.S.
All of that irrationality and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Windmill should not be allowed. It ruins the landscape. It kills the birds. They're noisy. The whole thing is a con job. It's very expensive. And in all fairness, Germany tried it, and wind doesn't work.
Oh, hi. All of that is a lie. This is your Green News Report. Wow, Desiree, the U.S. taxpayers sure paid a lot of money to send Donald Trump over to Scotland to lie about wind all weekend long, didn't we?
And to pay for everyone to go to his own golf course.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it? But that's where we are. What do you got for us today?
Well, first, the massive heat dome parked over the eastern half of the United States is setting some records and threatening the electric grid. But conditions are even worse in Iran, where temperatures have hit 122 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yikes.
The extreme heat and an ongoing five-year drought have triggered water shortages. Reservoirs supplying the capital, Tehran, are at their lowest levels in a century, curbing hydroelectric power as well. Scientists say the heat, overexploitation of groundwater, aging infrastructure, and the impacts of climate change are to blame. In Greece and Turkey, thousands of people have been evacuated as firefighters struggle to contain fast-spreading, wind-driven wildfires that have been exacerbated by persistent drought and a heat wave with unusually high temperatures topping 104 degrees for more than a week. In Australia, a persistent, intense marine heat wave has generated a devastating algae bloom, or red tide, affecting 1,500 square miles of ocean off South Australia's coastline. Toxic algae thrive in warm ocean waters, rapidly using up oxygen and nutrients, suffocating marine life that can't get out of the way fast enough. The red tide is also hitting South Australia's tourism revenue and its commercial fisheries. Australia's Marine Fishers Association estimates that about a third of South Australia's waters are devoid of fish.
Wow.
A different survey calculates that Australia's algae bloom has killed about 15,000 animals from over 450 species that are littering the seafloor and the beaches with carcasses.
Sounds nice.
Australia's Biodiversity Council calls it, quote, one of the worst marine disasters in living memory. Here's Dr. Georgina Wood of Australia's Flinders University on ITV News.
It's not solely caused by things like climate change, but it is influenced by things like a severe marine heat wave, which we've been experiencing for over 6 months. It's a natural disaster and it should be considered at a national scale. And we're going to see the impacts of this bloom for many, many years to come.
Meanwhile, at a press conference in Scotland over the weekend, Donald Trump delivered a bizarre litany of lies about solar and especially wind energy. Rather than repeat those lies, the facts are that both onshore and offshore wind energy projects are among the cheapest forms of energy to build around the world, costing far less than nuclear energy.
But he says it's so expensive.
And he's wrong.
Oh.
Wind energy also generates much cheaper electricity than fossil fuels around the world because the wind is free forever and not subject to price volatility.
Not yet. Give him time.
And NOAA says there is no direct evidence of whales being killed by wind industry activities.
Because you know Donald Trump is concerned about the whales.
But Trump's irrational hatred is having real-world impact. Data firm E2 calculates that, due to the Trump administration's rollbacks of clean energy incentives, $22 billion in planned clean energy projects have been canceled so far this year alone. Nearly 17,000 clean energy jobs lost, along with the related economic investments that communities were counting on, disproportionately affecting Republican control. Controlled states. The analysis was conducted before congressional Republicans repealed billions more dollars in clean energy incentives and investments in their one big beautiful bill. Long term, an analysis by Energy Innovations projects that as many as 760,000 jobs will be lost because of that bill by 2030. Factoring in the mass layoffs of tens of thousands of federal staffers, scientists, contracts, and more, Trump is literally the job-killing president.
But it's all about stopping waste, fraud, and abuse, right? For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Don't you know that we all gotta save the whales? Can't you see?
Because you know, nothing is more important for Donald Trump than saving those majestic beasts of the oceans. He always thinks about the oceans. That's the only reason he wants to do away with wind turbines, not because he thinks they mar his golf courses on the coast in Scotland, right? Yes, you put it well. All right, do we have time? Yeah, I think we do. We got time for one more Tom Lehrer before we get out?
Yes.
Okay. This will be a quickie. Got a short one here. He was so brilliant, Tom Lehrer, that which kind of makes sense that he was a mathematician when you hear his songs and when you hear his rhymes. He was so brilliant that he actually put the periodic table. He took the periodic table and he set it to music.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, and protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. There's holmium and helium and hafnium and erbium and phosphorus and francium and fluorine and terbium and manganese and mercury, molybdenum, magnesium, dysprosium and scandium and cerium and cesium and lead, praseodymium and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium and cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, kryptonium, and radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
The great Tom Lehrer, national treasure, gone this week as of the age of 97, but his music will live forever. Thank you very yes. much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can always download all of them for free, like Tom Lehrer's music, I guess, at bradblog.com. That is made possible, that free service, by those of you kind enough to hit a donate button when you stop by bradblog.com. Or if you prefer, you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate. I mentioned once or twice, I'll mention it again. We are working hard in the background. It's still going to take a while, but we are working hard in the background to upgrade, finally, long overdue upgrade to bradblog.com and our software so it runs better, smarter, smoother, better on your mobile device and everything else. But we could use your help. Please hit one of those donate buttons or go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. You'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. You'll find Desi Doyen there as well. She is
Green News Report.
There you go. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.